Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Here they come, Marianne smiled at her cousin Julie. Sure enough, in short order, four youngsters ages 5 to 9 tumbled noisily through the screen door and out onto the porch.
Can me and Kimmy go down to the shore before breakfast? We want to finish our sandcastle,
pleaded 9-year-old Kathy.
Yeah, me too,
chorused Benji and Mira, the 5-year-old twins.
We have our buckets.
Marianne and Julie looked at each other and then at their kids. Julie shrugged her shoulders. Why not? It's their vacation, too, you know.
Just stay together, Marianne looked at the group, and mind Kathy and Kimmy. They're in charge.
We'll call you when it's time for breakfast, Julie reminded them. So stay close to the house.
Why can't it be like this all the time? Marianne wondered aloud after the screen door slammed and the din faded. I've never seen all the kids so happy each day.
Well, Julie ventured, our lives tend to have a lot packed in day to day. There's just never enough time for anything like sandcastles before breakfast. Marianne drained the last of her lukewarm coffee.
Maybe we should figure out how to make this kind of time for them.
From a parent's perspective, what is the value of free time in our children's lives? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is very much a proponent of free time for kids. Dr. Penny Glass is a developmental psychologist with the Center for Child Development at Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C. She sees children with developmental concerns from birth to 3 years old and their families. This child development program provides comprehensive evaluations and consultation, parent support and training, referrals to specialty clinics and community programs, service coordination, and resource information. Dr. Glass is the mother of 3 adult sons, or as she likes to say, 3 rowdy boys. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Dr. Glass.
Thank you.
Developmentally speaking, how important is free time for kids?
I think it's very important, and I think the example that you just gave really brought memories back of my own, and I think is reality for families, that it's important for the adults, and adults feel refreshed, you know, after they've been away. I think they can capture that need for free time when they go away. But it's just as important for children to escape those sort of day-to-day responsibilities of school and academia and learning and chores and just break away for a period of time. That vacation is a different way of thinking about free time, and vacation is the real escape in getting away. The other kind of free time we might talk about is what you try to capture in the day-to-day life. And it begins with parents allowing an infant free time. Time not to have something that they have to respond to. And I find that to be extremely difficult for parents today, to think that the child could think when they are not being stimulated by something physical that the parent is doing to them or for them.
It seems like the trap that we all fall into is that free time has to be productive in some way.
Right, and it's just the opposite. Free time is personally productive, but it's not externally productive. So you can't really judge my free time. Free time is, for me, what sort of opens up my inside. And you might judge that as not to be producing something, and so therefore it's not of value. Whereas for me, it's of deep personal value because it allows one to then devote their energies to something productive, something that you know, they might do more on a day-to-day basis.
So, in other words, the daydreaming kid is possibly doing something very productive.
That's right. That's right. I think for parents, when they think about their daydreaming child, is that you want to think of it in a balance, obviously. It's the child does need to have those aspects of learning and school and social opportunities and that sort of thing. And then it's a balance of the child having the freedom to step away from that and to think, you know, to themselves, about the world, without our imposing a structure on it. But obviously, there can be too much of what might be considered a good thing, which would be a child who is, say, daydreaming or off on their own world too much. There's a balance, is what I want to say.
How do we know what's too much?
That's a real hard question. And I would probably say, I thought about that today, I would probably say that if the child is well adapted to their social circumstances, be that school, be that siblings, be that parents, if they're well sort of settled that way and responding and interacting and are reasonably successful, reasonable achievers, they don't have to be super achievers, but reasonable achievers in school, then you could see as it easier for a parent to allow that child that freedom of free time, of doing their own thing. But if a child is not coping with the social pressures from peers and from siblings and from parents, and they are pulling away, that's maybe something different. Mm-hmm. And that kind of daydreaming may be a child who's not able to cope and is really struggling. So we have to look at it from a parent's perspective, is what I would say. Well, pardon me.
Good choice of words.
Yeah,
How early in life would you say kids can benefit from free time? I'm watching, for example, my first grandchild, mm-hmm. who is 9 months old now. And when she was very, very little, I wanted to put her on the floor on a blanket, mm-hmm. and just let her lie there and look around. And my right. son and my daughter-in-law were, because they both work full-time, they feel that when they're home with her, mm-hmm. that they want to spend their time with her and show her things and do things. And
right.
I said, why don't we just see what she does, mm-hmm. you know, and we leave her alone. And maybe she'll turn over, or maybe she'll look at something that we haven't noticed that mm-hmm. she will notice. And they were sort of taken aback. But if they picked that up, and I just wasn't sure if that was officially an appropriate time for her to have free time.
Absolutely. It even begins earlier than that, in the sense that when, after a baby is born, if you think about what it is that the baby needs to do, the baby needs to feed and poop and sleep, and the parent should rest. And kind of what happens is parents don't do that anymore. They start going so fast. And in that sort of hyperactivity of parenting now is that they want the baby then to do something, and they want the baby to respond to them, to produce something. I think it begins that soon. And what should happen is that the mother should be sort of lying around, being tended to by family members, you know, an extended family type of thing. And the baby should be eating and pooping and sleeping, and ideally somebody's, you know, helping to prepare food. And the mother and the father, too, would be sort of restful, at peace, and watchful, and allowing the baby to do things, as you described, and to look at the baby with awe, rather than an attempt to try to get the baby to perform for them.
This description that you just gave of the newborn child, mm-hmm. and the parents being taken care of by mm-hmm. the extended family, right. and so forth, doesn't that happen in other cultures? It doesn't necessarily happen much in this culture.
Right, right. That is still happening, I would say, in other cultures, but I think it's a rarity in our culture. When I talk with young parents, I see them to be sort of surprised that that is an okay thing to do.
Mm-hmm. We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on free time for kids.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Penny Glass about the importance of free time in our children's lives.
Most of the youngest parents that I come into contact with have had babies in the intensive care nursery. And so I go around, I do developmental rounds in the intensive care nursery at our hospital just to speak to the parents about, like, it might be time for the baby to be discharged home. And I sort of ask them, you know, and so what are your plans and how had you thought about it? And my wish for them is, I said, I would like you to just go home and do nothing and be at peace and just get to know each other, you know, in a quiet way without feeling like, well, we have to do twice as many things to this baby because they've been sick for a period of time and they might have gotten behind, you know, and so we have to hurry for them to catch up. There is a tendency for that. On top of this tendency for parents to sort of be doing that anyway. So I tend to ask them what they have around the baby's bed or over the baby's bed or what sort of contraptions they've purchased. And that sort of tells me where that parent is in terms of the number of things that they've decided are necessary. And actually, I feel that at the same time that there are too many things that are getting between the parent and the baby in terms of mechanical devices.
You mean things equipment that we buy to stimulating?
Yes. Okay. Yes. That the stimulation that a parent provides naturally is, let's say, like the baby's like 6 months old, and I said, the greatest thing with a six-month-old is schlepping, you know, is just taking the baby around where you are doing your thing, not that you have to create the universe with the baby as the center of the universe, but the baby is a part of your universe, and you're going to go over to somebody's house, maybe, if you're lucky, or you're going to the grocery store, or you're, you know, going to do the laundry, and you just pop that baby on your hip, and off you go. The finest stimulation that I can think of is that baby sharing the day-to-day experiences like that, and parents somehow don't seem to think that those are worthy.
That brings up the concept that we've all been through, of course, of the siblings, mm-hmm. the second child, the third child, mm-hmm. who isn't the center of the universe,
right.
big time.
Right.
And do they fare better because
well,
of all
actually,
this?
Well, actually, the second child just, and I think the parent fares better with the second child, and then the child fares better in the sense that they haven't had that sort of overwhelming focus on them. And so socially, they're much more competent that way.
Should free time just include hanging out in the bedroom, listening to rock music? We were thinking about children who have gotten to the stage of being teenagers.
Right.
And, of course, they seem to have a lot of free time, much more free time than we ever expected.
I think if that's what that person enjoys, particularly that allows them downtime, then I think that's fine. But I think there should be a variety of choices that the child is able to make and not just have that one thing that they do. It's easier to start those interests when they're younger than to suddenly be dragging this teenager out of his room because he's listening to music you don't like mm-hmm. and trying to make him do things.
So that really goes back to letting your child explore the world and schlepping the child around with
That's
you
true.
And giving
That's
the child
true.
A lot of experiences.
And some of that experience involves what we would call hobbies or other occupations that are of the around that child's interest. And maybe it's a collection that that child has and ways that parents can help stimulate that child's interest in a collection of, you know, rocks. doesn't matter what it is. It takes the child outside of this tight, closed world. And then their free time becomes sort of exploring these other interests in life. And then it's not the parent seeing the child locked in their room with rock music sort of banging around, you know.
Let's explore a little bit what free time does to our children. Mm-hmm. What exactly does it support in the child?
I think it supports thinking. We can get exposed to a lot of information, and what we need is time to consolidate that information, those thoughts. Maybe it was a provocative thought that challenged our way of thinking. And one of the nice ways to approach that is to have just hangout time where you can kind of mull over that thought and not be pushed to do something in an achieving sort of way with it, but think about it for a period of time. And you have to have free time in order to think about things like that. So I think it's very important that way.
How can busy parents that we've talked about a lot so far foster this kind of free time? Because, you know, there's so many families where things are quite frantic and,
right.
and just to get in the basics is a big deal.
Right. I think of a family that the child was a patient of mine and the family in that respect was too. And the child happened to have some special needs. But what the father did with his children I thought was so wonderful. There were four children in the family. He sat down with them and he said, well, we have two choices. And he said, one choice is that daddy can continue to, you know, work the way he's working and we can go on fancy vacations and do the special things, you know, that we do. The other choice we can make is that daddy can reduce his work time, that he can work fewer hours. He will not earn as much money. You know, but daddy will be more available to do things. What do you think? And the children chose Daddy, of course. So having a family meeting is a very powerful thing to do, to listen to the children to see what they might want to offer. Where are they coming from for what we think is so important to them might not be so important to them after all. And what they may want is some time of their parent. And then the parent is able to share sort of, you know, different occupations with the child, different interests, and explore those things with the child. It was a very powerful statement for this family to make, knowing that they also were dealing with a child with special needs and that that child was going to, you know, take time too. But so I would say for parents is that busy, busy parents, you might want to sit down and get out a piece of paper and start writing down everything you do and then just make priorities, because something always has to go. My youngest child used to, when I was a single parent for quite a period of time, and trying to get three children out the door. You see, two children, you have two hands, but three children, you only have two hands. And so his way was to lie down. He would just lie down when it was time to go, and I'm trying to get three children out into the car, you know, after breakfast and everything. I discovered that he did not like to be pushed, and of course, I was rushing. And so well, the solution turned out to be to get up 15 minutes earlier, move a little bit more slowly in the morning, and then kind of off we would go.
Simple solution, it was but you paid attention to what his needs
were. It was just thinking and watching him. And most times, I have to say, as a parent, I didn't do that well.
It's a big club.
That's right. It's just because you're living it. It's much more difficult. It's easier to be observing it from the outside and say, you know, this is what would work. But the priorities in that circumstance were, I can afford 15 minutes pretty easily here without any disruption, you know, my schedule. And still we can get out the door and get to, you know, work or school or wherever we were going.
It's a great example of paying attention to one child's manner of doing things.
Right.
And how simple it can be.
He's
and make
still
him
that
more comfortable.
Way, I have to say.
They grow older,
he was
but
slow
they don't
coming
grow
up. Out too, getting bored. Just deliberate and determined to do it on his own time. But, you know, it's just the way he's continued to be. But getting back to the priority list, I think parents are awfully busy doing things that aren't terribly important, you know, for their children. And if they work out in a family meeting sort of developing these lists together, I think they'll be surprised at some of those things that they don't consider quite so important. At the same time, the parents need to show the child that free time and downtime and thinking time and quiet time is important for everybody and that it is respected. So the parent just doing that is a real positive thing.
So modeling is
yes,
very important.
Yes, modeling is very important. I suggested, for example, when a child is trying to do their lists, it's not free time, but it's a good example. The child is trying to do their homework, and parents typically say to me, I can't get the child to do their homework, and they won't stay at the table, and, you know, and all this. So first question is, where's the table? Which, of course, it's usually in the kitchen, and there's everything else going on. And so I say to the parent, well, what are you doing when you want the child to be doing this? And they say, well, you know, I'm getting dinner, and da da da. I said, well, if you really want to get the homework done fast, the best thing to do is to show the child that this is quiet time and we are all going to respect quiet attention to whatever we're doing. And the child would be much more productive if you sit down and read at that time to yourself. And you're still, then you're not producing this kind of activity which sort of keeps the child, you know, moving and not thinking about what he's trying to do. And you can set a simple goal for, you know, let's be quieter, let's do this together for 15 minutes. You work on your work and I'm going to read quietly, you know, and then we'll check the homework. And what you'll find is that the homework gets done 10 times faster than it would have gotten done. Then there is time to do something else, some, you know, free choice kind of time. And the parent has modeled it rather than browbeating the child to try to be able to do something that they want to do. Yeah. So it's sort of a quieter approach to both the modeling and the respect for what needs to be done and then the having actually time left over for everybody.
It's another typical example of our children learn from what we do.
That's right.
Not from the lectures
we
give.
That's right. Yeah.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on free time for kids.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Penny Glass about the importance of free time in our children's lives. I was going to tell the story of the camping trip we had when my oldest was reading and could read to himself, mm-hmm. you know, would read a, as they used to call them, chapter books, mm-hmm. the kids. And we used to have a quiet time every afternoon, especially on a camping trip mm-hmm. when we needed a break too. And so we had all the kids inside the camper. Supposedly they could take a nap, they could read, they could draw, they could do whatever mm-hmm. they wanted to do very quietly. And my husband opened, we were sitting at the picnic table reading, and he opened the door, and we're missing our oldest son. And I thought, that's weird. How did he get away? You know, where is he? And I still don't remember how he got to where he was. He obviously did. So, of course, we start calling his name. You know, where are you? Are you hiding? Whatever. And this little voice comes from above. I'm in the tree reading, and you're disturbing my quiet time.
that's
where he was,
yeah,
indeed.
Yeah, that's great.
So I think that they do learn mm-hmm. by what they see.
By what they see.
Yeah.
Even what you all know, as I do, with the where our children are in terms of their being young adults now, is that you might not see the learning at the moment, but you'll see the learning later, and you'll sort of hear the learning later. My children, when I would ask them when they were young, I would sort of let them mess around for a while in the house, and then it would be too much going on, and their friends were there and everything, and so I would just say, okay, everybody out, you know, outside, got to play outside, just go. And I never really knew at the time what that meant, but afterwards my children had all said to me, that was when they had the most fun, is when they were thrown out of the house. And they had to figure out, you know, what to do.
It's a reminder, too, of all the toys that we spend so much money on that
right.
do this and do that, when really the best toys are the empty cardboard boxes
often.
Or the tree in the backyard mm-hmm. or sticks or mm-hmm. whatever, because mm-hmm. then they can use their imagination and they're sort of in charge.
Right. There's wonderful things written about time out for young children, but there's not as much focus placed on time in. But there are some psychologists that are good, strong proponents of time in. And time in meaning paying attention to your child when they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. And one of the ways we have of encouraging play and sort of leisure time activities, there's free time and leisure time activities, is to admire our children and comment when we see them engaging in something they should be doing. That often is the time we ignore them because they're not bothering us, you know, and they're busy. But it's a very powerful time for the child to see that they are being admired and respected for the fact that they have done something independently and are occupying themselves in a very, very nice way.
I think that's a real key reminder for mm-hmm. most parents, because mm-hmm. that's when we say, oh, it's quiet, they're busy, we'll just ignore
away,
them and
right.
go and do whatever we have
right.
to do. But that is a key time.
Mm-hmm. It's also a good time for the parent to sit down and sort of say, oh, you know, I'm going to sit here and read too. So do sort of what the child is doing and do something in a quiet way rather than occupy themselves away. When there are things to be occupied with, that's a nice opportunity for the child to participate in those activities with the adult, and then their quiet times. So sometimes it's our bustling that stirs them up and gets them sort of coming after us. That's not necessarily a time to put them back to occupy them as much as it is to allow them, you know, to come sort of join in to these tasks that are needed to keep a household running, ways of mommy and daddy not having more time for leisure themselves because there are these participants in a household.
So. Helpers.
Helpers, yeah, big ones. Young adults don't quite know what to do with their free time.
Mm-hmm.
you know,
there's
except go
that.
Shopping.
And we don't want all the video games things like
that
to be what
That's
they
right.
do.
So leisure activities need to be developed, as I was saying, you know, when you're younger, and then adults need to be thinking about those sorts of things that are kind of just fun to do, but do take up some what they might feel is empty space.
It sounds like when we're giving our children some interests that they can pursue on their own, we're also giving them a richness to know what things they can really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's giving them sort of an inner breadth in addition to just things that they can do.
And in that way, it exposes them to the wide, wide world in a wonderful way.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have made this a wonderful adventure for us because you've opened the eyes of us and all our listeners to the real benefits of free time. So, Dr. Penny Glass, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's certainly been a pleasure. Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. And mention show number 255. Tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Washington, D.C. with Kids is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Harker family. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.